Hi, today's April 4th, 2021. This is Movies Podcast 357. I'm Todd Agassa-Ward, my good friend John Westfall. And before we get started, I just wanted to thank our old friend Johan van Mierlo for joining us last week. Really appreciate him taking the time to do so. I learned a lot. You know, I really didn't know what Johan did. I mean, I knew what he did, but, you know, I knew who he worked for. I just didn't know what he did.
Well, after 10 years, you start to wonder, you know, because we're not very chatty on social media about, you know, work-related things. I think we've all seen each other's posts about life, but you don't necessarily talk about what we do. So it was very great, very good to talk to Johan, as it's been to talk to everyone that we've had on recently and hear what they've been doing with themselves.
Yep, and we've got some other friends that will be coming up soon. Our buddy Rocco will be on at the end of the month. We'll try to line up somebody for next week. So it's been fun. I mean, we've done 5 or 6 of these now, I guess. And it's been it's been really interesting catching up with people we've talked to in 10 years.
Yep.
But anyhow, so one of the things, the first thing I wanted to bring up is kind of unusual for me because I am not a gamer. I'm not only, well, I enjoy playing games. I'm just not good at it. Let's put it that way.
I think I'm very accurately in that same camp.
So, but it was interesting, you know, as you know, I blame John for a lot of things. And one of the things I blame him for is my Apple One subscription, which has turned out to be a really good subscription. But one of the things it includes is the Apple Arcade subscription, which is normally, I think, $5 a month. But if you have Apple One, it's just part of the package. So Apple Arcade has had a couple of games I enjoyed. I played Tint, T-I-N-T, for a while until I kind of hit a level where I got stuck and I just kind of lost interest after I was trying to solve it. By the way, there is a way to get around it, kind of a cheat, a built-in cheat, I should say, where it gives you hints on how to solve it. But I just didn't want to do that. So I moved on to another game. My new current favorite game is Spire Blast, which is kind of like a, what is it, a puzzle shooter, I guess? Kind of like Tetris. Not like Tetris, but, you know, in that vein. And it's way fun. I got stuck on level 93 for about a week. Like I said, I'm not very good. I finally got past that. But anyway, there's been a couple of games on there that's been really interesting, which is surprising because, like I said, I'm not a good gamer. But the most one of the most interesting things that happened the past week is that Apple released like 30-something games, new games for it. And I can't say I've really tried any of them. I've downloaded a few. But the interesting thing is, if you look at the list of games they release, you know, instead of games you never heard of, and you thought, well, maybe it's interesting, maybe it's not, it's games that you might recognize. Like, for example, Monument, which was a huge hit as a standalone game, apparently is now available through Apple Arcade. I don't know if it's exactly the same as the original release, which I did buy and I really enjoyed. I actually completed that, I think. So I think 2 versions of Sudoku, I should say. Boy, I pronounced it wrong. Sudoku. 2 versions of Sudoku. I downloaded one called Sudoku Plus. And then a crossword puzzle game. I think there's also like a Star Trek game and some other things.
There's some really cool stuff. And I believe the list also included Fruit Ninja.
Yeah.
Which was one of the classic. That was, I think, really the first game on iOS that people looked at and said, wow, I want to play that game. So I think Apple has really strengthened Arcade with throwing these in there. Yeah. Because in a lot of these cases, you couldn't get the classic games anymore. They, you know, had never been updated for the more recent versions of iOS, or they had morphed into new versions of themselves. You know, the original authors decided, hey, let's maybe in an attempt to get more money, rebrand it, rebadge it. So it's cool to have the originals back.
Yes, and as I'm going to say it out loud because, you know, although it makes me kind of sad, I really, really hope that Sid Meier's Civilization, the first release for the iPad, is revived and made available again, because it got lost in the shuffle because it's a 32-bit app, and it, you know, it doesn't run under the 64-bit iPad OS. So, you know, I haven't been able to play it for a while. Well, that's not true. I do have an old iPad Mini. I think it's the first iPad Mini that can't be upgraded to the current version of iPad OS, and on which it still runs, but it's kind of slow, you know, by today's standards. So I'm hoping there's some other classic games on there that's really interesting, or it's looked interesting. I haven't actually played them yet, but I'm looking forward to maybe trying them one of these days.
Well, and let's always remember, if you're a classic mood or a classic game person from around 2000, late 90s, on macOS, you can get SimCity 4 and The Sims 2. So if you want to jump back in time to when those games were a little bit simpler than their current modern incarnations, you can grab those as well.
I actually enjoyed the original SimCity. You know,
yeah, that I think might be now abandoned, where you might be able to find that on the internet, original SimCity.
Yeah, there used to be a web version of it that EA... Was it EA? Yeah, I guess EA actually made available for free, but I haven't looked it up in a while. But at any rate, Apple Arcade, 30-plus new games, it's been a lot of classics. Going to try some. I mean, some of them are really nice to have, like crosswords. I'm not sure I would spend money to buy a crossword puzzle game. Not a real crossword puzzle freak, but it's kind of one of those, it's nice to have on my device if I ever feel in the mood.
Definitely. Okay.
So, John, you want to talk about some fitness gadgets?
Yeah, we can talk about that. This is kind of a gadgety podcast, and we'll talk in a moment about some other gadgets. But recently, my wife and I started going for walks together. I've been going for walks for about a year on my own. That's how I've lost a bunch of weight in the last year, one of the ways that I've lost a bunch of weight. And my wife said, well, why don't we go out together? And we'd go out here and there. But lately... we've been doing a virtual challenge that's a certain amount of miles that, ironically, I already have in the time frame that you need to get it, but she wanted to get it as well. So we've been going out, and she uses a Fitbit. I believe she has one of the Versa bands, about 3 years old, 4 years old. Doesn't have the GPS tracking like an Apple Watch does. Doesn't have, but it can be used without having the phone nearby. So she just takes that. She doesn't take her phone. And I use my Apple Watch. And what has been really interesting to us is the difference in what's reported. And it'll be somewhere up around sometimes as high as a half a mile difference in distance, where she'll be showing, you know, 2.1 miles. I'll be showing 2.5 miles. And it's startling, kind of the differences in the accuracy. And it's likely because hers is going off of her self-reported stride length and just the movement back and forth, and mine's going off GPS, I assume. But it got me thinking a lot about these health gadgets that we buy. I also last year mentioned that I bought an Aura band, A-U-R-A, and I didn't use it that much because the first versions of the software were very buggy. They you couldn't always get it to even measure consistently. Now it seems like they fixed those software bugs, but if I compare what the Aura or AURA does with my body fat analyzer scale, my wife's just texted me. She has the Charge, the Fitbit Charge, not the Versa. I think it's a Charge 2 actually, or something around there. But anyway, if you compare my body fat analyzer scale with the Aura strap, you find a difference there, where one will tell me I have 9 pounds of visceral fat, the other will say it's 3 pounds. The body fat, the body composition stuff is not very accurate. And I, you know, I'm at the end of the day wondering which one's accurate. I don't really know. But it's just kind of striking that we have all this fitness stuff, but if you actually, like, you can use the numbers as relative benchmarks, you know that you're getting better or you're, you know, doing more than what your device told you a week ago or 2 weeks ago. But if you want the objective number, you might not be getting the actual objective number.
You know, I completely agree with you. In fact, so I'm holding up both wrists so John can see them on camera. And I have an Apple Watch on my left wrist and a Fitbit Charge 4 on my right wrist. And the reason is because although the Apple Watch has many more functions than the Fitbit, although Fitbit is a few the Apple Watch doesn't have, but although the Apple Watch is much more functional than a Fitbit, the Fitbit, in my personal experience, is more accurate. And I say that having used a Fitbit since the first Fitbit, you know, the one you just stuck on your belt or your pocket, or stuck in your pocket. And And when I got my Apple Watch and I got a few other things, you know, or an Apple, even a phone, you know, I noticed that the Apple phone undercounted my steps. And by that, I mean, I would actually walk. And with every step, I would see if it registered. And the Fitbit is pretty accurate. I was going to say was, but it is. I still use it. It is accurate. You know, I take one step, one count, two steps, two counts, and that sort of thing. Whereas the Apple Watch seemed to undercount things. And so at the end of the day, although I never really thought about, I mean, I thought about it, but never reported it. Like you, I look at the step count on my Apple Watch and the step count on my, or from my Apple Watch and the step count from my Fitbit, and my Fitbit, you know, is a little bit higher. And as I said, just from, you know, simple counting of steps by testing it, it seems, I would say it's more accurate. Although, you know, it's not a scientific test. It's just sort of a, you know, take a step, see, does it count, yes or no. Actually, does my Apple Watch doesn't even have a step count anymore? It used to. As flights climbed, I don't see a step count. That's kind of interesting. Maybe I don't have it in my list. Oh, here it is, steps. I just don't have it on the front page. Yeah, so let's see. The Apple Watch says I've taken 1,140 steps today. It's 920. I haven't done much today. And the Fitbit says I've taken 1,666. So, and I've been wearing them both, you know, this time. So they should be, you know, like you said, it's the counts are different and noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, by a couple hundred steps at least. But again, I haven't done much today. Yeah. And in fact, even things like heart rate monitoring, you know, both the Fitbit Charge 4 and the Apple Watch have, you know, things like resting heart rate. And those don't agree either, you know, on. Now, maybe it's because one's on the right wrist and one's on the left wrist. I don't know. I'm not a cardiologist or a fitness expert of any kind. But yeah, it's really interesting. And in Apple itself says, right, don't use this as a diagnostic tool, right? Just use it as an indicator. Go see your health professional if you suspect any problems. But I still find it useful.
Yeah. I mean, I think all these have a use in their relative fashion. But yep. If you are a real real lover of knowing the numbers and having all the numbers,
yeah,
it's going to be a very sort of frustrating thing in a sense where you don't know objectively. So you might go to your doctor's office and say, hey, doc, I've been working really hard to get, you know, this number down, and I finally got below the number I wanted it to be at. And you might find your doctor going, well, you know, technically you're a little bit above that because yours was not exactly accurate.
Right.
Now, it won't be horribly off. Or you might find the opposite. You might think that you're so close to getting somewhere, and your doctor might tell you, yeah, actually, you're already there. Congratulations. Yeah.
So. I will say one thing I have that seems to be pretty accurate is I bought a Bluetooth blood pressure cuff a couple of years ago. And when I go to my physician, I just went to see him the other day for my annual checkup. And it turned out that we're pretty much on the money, you know. So that was a really surprising and happy finding for me, that the blood pressure monitor is pretty accurate, at least in agreement with my physician's blood pressure cuff. So that was pretty nice.
So, should we talk about cooler gadgets?
Oh, yeah.
Hail from a universe that we love, and yes. I've got a lot to say about. So, okay. Go ahead. You are the originator of this, of bringing this topic back up again.
Well, so John and I bought the 2021 version, I think it's a 2021 version, of something that's been around for a while, but apparently this one is supposed to be a little bit improved. It's a Star Trek comm badge from Next Generation, and it is Bluetooth enabled, so it can be used as a microphone and speaker with your phone, as well as just a Bluetooth speaker in general, although, you know, it's not audio file quality audio coming out of it, but you can hear music if you want to. I would suggest using earbuds, but and just fun, right? Kind of my dream is if we ever go back to the office, I can be walking around the office and accept a Microsoft Teams call right up, you know, by tapping my comm badge.
Well, yeah, that is definitely the most awesome part about it, is that you can use it as a functional Bluetooth speaker, and it can be, you know, the just so accurate version of what you always thought of when you saw it on the screen. I mean, it technically does what a, and of course, a double tap on it will activate Siri on your phone. So you've got that. You can ask the computer to give you whatever it is you might want. And of course, the company that has done this is the Wand Company, which many people know. They are sort of one of the few companies that's bringing higher quality replica devices more into mass production. You know, if you wanted to have some of these things in the past, you either had to build them yourselves or you know, find the kits on Roddenberry.com and then buy the electronics packages and everything else. These make it more accessible. So have you taken a Teams call or done anything with it other than play with it at this point?
No, you know, I have not. I've not taken any real phone calls. I've tested it, I think, with my daughter and my wife, but that was about it in terms of making a phone call just to make sure it worked. But what I thought I'd do is so that people, our fives of listeners, can hear what the more or less what the audio quality is like. And I don't know, John and I forgot to test it before we started the podcast. But I don't know what if we're going to have any feedback problems, you know, if I need to shut off a microphone or something here. But let's find out. John, can you give me a call? And we'll if we get feedback, we'll start over and shut down microphones.
Let's see if I can use Siri to do this.
Okay.
Come on. So mine, I will admit that I think I let the battery get a little low on mine. And maybe, you know what, it might have died. Yeah, it unfortunately did die while we were talking. It was working at the beginning of the call.
Yeah. But you know, I can just call John's phone.
Yeah, call my phone and we can go with that.
All right, let's try that. So I've got my comm badge on my, right over my heart, where it, you know, belongs for obvious reasons. John Westfall, calling your mobile.
Actually, hold on one moment while you, there we go. You are calling?
Yes.
All right. You're going to get double of me. Hold on. I'll mute myself on Skype.
All righty. Okay, I gotta raise the volume on my side. Okay, let's try that again, John. Uh-oh. Did I lose you?
Yeah. Oh. You might have lost me.
It went to the iPod Pros. Hang on. My phone is too smart. It decided audio quality is better, but let me try this again. Let's see, comm badge connected. Oh, I know what I gotta do. I gotta set, let's see, audio comm badge there. Try it again, John.
Alright, you are now hearing me, Captain.
You know, it's not very loud. I can't tell if it's because of my noise cancellation or it's you know, something else, but yeah. Okay, I'm gonna hang up on John, and oh, you could hear the tweet. So, for some reason Apple Music also started on my Mac. But and let me go fix my audio because I think I lost audio. Microphone is set correctly, but my speaker is not going to my AirPods. So I need to fix that. Okay, that should work.
So
all right. Well, that was an interesting. That was interesting.
And mine does. Although
it's funny because when I tested the audio earlier, it was actually pretty loud. So I'm not sure why John's audio wasn't all that loud. And I hadn't tried it with my AirPods on before, but it actually, I had my AirPods connected to my MacBook Pro for the podcast, for speakers at least. I'm using a microphone on the MacBook Pro for the mic as a test. Because I found the AirPods Pro microphone was just way too low for me last week, low volume. But anyway, it was an interesting. Hope you could hear John in my test. John, you still there? I lost John's audio. Hang on. I have an audio problem. What is my audio problem? I can't hear John. Why can't I hear John? Output device. Test. John, can you say something?
Yes, John has more to say. So if you can hear me.
That is weird.
I am talking.
Okay, so the view meter. Okay, John, can you say something now?
Yes. Do you hear me now?
No, I just can't hear stuff on AirPods Pro. Okay, I'm gonna put my AirPods Pro away because the Mac is just not talking to the right audio device for whatever reason. I'm gonna switch back to this. Okay.
All right, can you hear me at all now?
Audio device. Oh, okay. So I'm gonna switch this to speakers. Okay. All right, I think I can hear John now.
Yeah,
you heard my phaser.
Yep, I heard your phaser.
And now I hear you. I hear myself.
Okay, good. So the problem was, this was interesting. I never anticipated this. So a couple things happened when John and I tried to have a comm badge test. First thing that happened is my iPhone decided, I don't like your comm badge as much as I like the Apple iPods Pro, and switched my audio from the comm badge Bluetooth speaker and microphone to the AirPods Pro. And then well, that was interesting. Was that me? That was you. Okay, let me hang on, gang. We might lose John for just a second. I gotta switch access points. Okay, I think we're good. I think we're good. Okay, I should have John back.
All right. Can you hear me now?
I can indeed. It also switched me to a slower access point. Anyway, you were saying.
So the comm badges are very cool, but I think it's worth noting that the wand company that made them sort of shortchanged TNG comm badges when you look at what they've done with two out of the three products that they've created for the original series. So a number of years ago, they came out with this, which is the standard issue phaser. This phaser from the original series is not only a great cosplay, and it's actually very heavy. It's got a base in it and everything else. The Type 1 is removable from the Type 2. And while it is not just a fun device for, shooting random people through Skype, it also is a universal remote control. So you can put it into remote mode and use it to literally shoot your TV and change channels and do a number of things. In addition to it, being very heavy, it's got at least about a half a pound on just the handle. It comes with a box that is looks like what you would get out of the equipment locker on the Enterprise. It's a plastic box with cutouts for all of the pieces.
That's nice.
And it comes with a display stand that you can then put it up on your desk or wherever you're going to put it, and a little screwdriver to take the screw out that is holding the handle to the rest of the Type 2 body. It also comes with a very full-featured manual and a lot of little extras, like you can pull the one side panel out and see the crystal light up on the inside of the phaser, or what would be a crystal. Yeah, that's attention to detail I would love to see on a next-gen phaser, if the WAD company were to ever make it, but Unfortunately, just for the original series fans.
Yeah. And for those who are not familiar with the Trek universe, and first, shame on you.
Yes.
But what John showed with his gun, I did not realize. So there are various kinds of phaser weapons in the Trek universe, the original series. And there's a rifle. But what John has is a handgun. What I didn't know is, and it looks kind of like a futuristic, pistol, right? But what I didn't know is the handheld phaser, which looks like a phone, actually. It looks like a small, 1990s Motorola flip phone or 2000s flip phone, actually extracts from the pistol gear. Was it like that in the real
The
series?
I didn't know that. The Type 1 phaser would be removable. And as you can see, I put it kind of back in its box. Really did a nice job of having cutouts, and you have kind of a very hefty, substantial thing with that.
It looks almost like a penguin box.
Yes. That is the phaser, but the communicator is arguably a little bit more cool than even that. So the communicator has a Bluetooth radio built into it, so it can act just like the comm badges. It can act like a phone. And it also comes in a hard shell like this that has, you know, Enterprise on it. Comes with a little plastic vinyl case, so you can put that in your pocket so that it doesn't get banged up if it's in your pocket. But what's probably most interesting about the communicator, you know, obviously you open it, you get the communicator noise, and you can hit buttons that will say things to you. But the cool thing about it is, the manual actually goes into, I'm showing Todd, there's a flowchart in the manual for how you can use the buttons to basically access probably 20 different clips, 20 different audio clips that it can play when it's in FX mode. And then when it is connected to a Bluetooth device, it can do voice command, it can of course answer calls, end calls, it can do a last number redial. It can do quite a lot of things. Again, it can even do a delayed hailing beep. So if you open it and press and hold both of the buttons on the inside,
right,
and then close it, I believe after 5 seconds, it will call you back or hail you. Oh, I put it into pairing mode by accident. But even then, I mean, just the idea that you could get it to do all of that. Like I said, the Wand Company really needs to step up their game with next generation replicas. And right now, they are working on a tricorder, an original series tricorder. And I just found on their website where you can register for your interest in that, and they'll keep me updated. And I definitely will be purchasing that when it comes out, just because these are really nice things to have, I think.
But have they said, you know, given that their devices are functional in various ways, do you know what the tricorder will be able to do? Like, will it actually be able to measure anything?
So I'm actually on the Tricorder's blog right now, and I'm trying to see if they do have what it is supposed to, what their plan is for it. But I have not been able to find that, because I didn't even realize they were doing a Tricorder until probably the last few minutes before our podcast started. But yeah, they are... They're an interesting group, and they've of course got some things from some other fandoms right now. So you can get a Pokeball if you were a fan of Pokemon. You can get some Doctor Who stuff, which I don't know if they still have in production, but they are definitely moving ahead with things that I think all techie geeks appreciate and love.
232 days.
But show some love to Next Gen. You know, bring us a Next Gen tricorder, bring us a Next Gen phaser, and bring us the holy grail of all props that I really would love to have would be Dr. Crusher's medical kit from Next Gen. The bag, and then the also the medical tricorder and all that. So I always keep saying if I have spare money, I would buy the props, you know, and put them together. And I do have the money for it. I just haven't had the ambition to do it quite yet. But that is an eventual end goal on my end, would be to have a next-gen functional medical kit.
Wow, I'm just trying to figure out. I'm looking through the blog now that you've, you know, told me about it. And again, John is going to make me spend money I didn't anticipate I was going to spend.
Oh, but it is so worth it, because it's exactly what you wanted when you were younger, or and even to this day. You know, yeah, when you see these things on TV and you see them. In all their glory, you just really want to hold it. And it looks like they do their best to hold it, allow you to see it. Let's see.
I would like a functional phaser to take out guys that cut me off in traffic. But, you know, aside from that, I'm pretty happy with what I've seen so far.
So it's saying they're doing, so if you ask what can you do with it?
Yeah.
Their FAQ answer is measure the environment, scan radio frequencies, record audio, and pressure friends. Enjoy seeing your dearest Star Trek wish come true and love the fact that you own perhaps the most sophisticated prop replica ever designed and manufactured. Sure.
So basically it's a radio if it scans radio frequencies.
Yeah.
I think so it's going to be a radio.
Kind of cool. Like I said, and I also own, they have the Star Trek original series Phaser and Rock, which is another Type 1 phaser and a rock that if you point the phaser at the rock and hit the phaser button, it'll actually light up the rock. So you can use the rock as a little lamp, and then you can set it to either go off after a certain amount of time or set it to, dim slowly, such as it's cooling off. Which is a cool little prop that you can put on your desk and play with from time to time.
You know, one thing that's disappeared and doesn't require any additional hardware purchase is back in the early days of the iPhone, I don't think it was available by the time the iPad came out in 2010, but I remember there was an app that mimicked the pad, the Star Trek Next Generation pad with two Ds.
Yes.
And it didn't do a lot. But, you know, it basically made the home screen, or not the home screen, made your screen on your iPhone look like a small version of a pad. And I thought, you know, it'd be really cool if somebody would have a licensed app from Paramount that allow, you know, the Star Trek look, a pad, P-A-D-D look. I don't even remember what pad stands for. Now I got to go look it up.
Personal access and display device, I think is something.
That sounds right. With what they call the LCARS UI design, right?
So, yes. Library computer access and retrieval system, I think was LCARS.
Right. And John got the PADD exactly right. Personal access display device. I just looked it up. But anyway, that disappeared. And I assume it was some kind of copyright problem or whatever. But well, I wish it would come back.
One of them was actually from Paramount. So I'm not sure where those came from, but it would be nice to have them back. Because they're just kind of cool. I really should build a Star Trek watch face for my Apple Watch in some way, but I have not been ambitious enough to do that yet. But
did they wear watches on Star Trek?
They did not.
Yeah, they didn't.
Unless you count the original or the motion picture, where the communicator was a wrist communicator.
I forgot about that. Yeah, they're a watchless society, as we were before the Apple Watch emerged, right?
Yes.
We were in a Star Trek watchless universe.
Apple decided that we should
all have watches. And watches are now the norm, which is weird, right? Having disappeared from, collective memory for a while. Okay. You know, it's funny, John. I was thinking last night when I had like one thing in our... in our podcast show notes, I said, man, this is going to be like a 5-minute discussion. Here we are at 35 minutes into the podcast.
Well, you start talking about gadgets, and yeah. that's what happens.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm hopeful to see what the tricorder does. I think Todd and I will probably both own a tricorder at some point.
Yep.
And I will publicly thank Todd. He was the one that bought me the updated communicator badge. And I appreciate it.
Ah, you're very welcome. There's the least I can do. For all your help and help me spending my money over the years.
Help alleviating you from the burden of extra money.
You know? It's like, no, I don't really need to save money for retirement. I'll just buy gadgets.
What do you need retirement for? And plus, you've got more time. There's so much time between now and when you retire in 628 days, 3 hours, 40 minutes, and 19 seconds.
Exactly right. Okay. The last item. Like I said, I thought this was going to be the last item in a 10-minute podcast or so. Last item I have in our show notes is something I just ran across this morning, actually, which is a study came out of Microsoft on their own employees. And the title is a little bit dramatic. But the ZDNet...
The ZDNet
subject... But it's interesting, still. And it worked, right? I clicked on it. Microsoft reveal. Oh, I should do it. I should try in an announcer voice, which I don't have. Microsoft revealed the latest truths about working from home. One is truly disturbing. So, first, you know, the thing, and I don't know if John agrees with me on this first point I'm going to make. John and I have been involved with Microsoft over the years for a number of years, including being under campus for a while. I worked as a contractor for them in the 90s. You know, I don't know them as well as a full-time employee does. That's, you know, on campus all the time. I was mostly remote. But Microsoft is not like other companies, even today, I think. So I'm not sure how generalizable their observations are. That said, I agree with them. You know, even though I don't work there anymore as a contractor, I haven't been up there in a decade. It's all about what is this working from home doing to us as you know, employees of a company, or in my case, a government entity. But John works for a university, so a public university, so very similar in that respect. But I don't know, you know, and John and I have talked about this in the past, about, you know, how things have changed during the pandemic from, you know, aside from obvious and work point of view. And one of the horrific fact, by the way, is that 52% of the company's IMs were sent between 6 p.m. and midnight. I don't know if that wasn't true before.
There's more horrific things than that. I mean, the rest of the article goes on to talk about how decision makers, bosses, say they're thriving in work from home, whereas those that are without decision-making abilities or without control over their work are not. So that is a little bit depressing that if you already sort of had some autonomy, then you're doing really well. If you didn't have autonomy before, you don't have autonomy now either.
Yeah, but it wasn't that true before too? I mean,
yeah,
you know, pre-pandemic. And besides, John, you probably, who did the executive monkey study decades and decades ago? You know, with the button pressing, the one monkey is able to control the shock and the other isn't.
There are a lot of those kind of things in IO, I don't recall that specific one at this point, but there are very similar things.
So basically we're talking about the executive monkey syndrome, where, you know, if you've got some control, you're doing better than a person doesn't have control, and that's true, you know, with or without a pandemic. Might be exacerbated during the pandemic, but yeah, I wasn't too surprised by that at all. I mean, you know, especially at Microsoft, right, where executives are literally billionaires, or at least millionaires, the rank and file aren't exactly poor, you know. So, you know, and one of the subtitles was The Unbearable Inequality of Experiences. Right. Again, very dramatic. And it says Microsoft research says 30% of employees, I should note, well, now they're generalizing it. 30% of employees say companies are making them work too hard. I fancy another 37% worried that their responses would get back to their bosses. Still, 41% admitted they wanted to find a new employer. And I wonder, I don't know. You know, I don't know what the job market's been like during the pandemic. I mean, obviously, well, bad, number one. But, you know, for those who do have the opportunity to change, I wonder how many did. And I just don't know those numbers. I'm not saying they didn't. I'm not saying they did. I'm just saying I don't know those numbers. And it'd be really interesting how many people during the pandemic changed jobs. We know a few friends who did some really dramatic job changes, in fact. One became the president of a company. And John, I've asked John about, you know, his experience as a, you know, an educator as a university educator, what his experience has been like, and he's been able to share some of that with us. I can say one of the things I've been wondering about that's sort of similar to this article, which is why I was drawn to it, is that what they don't talk about, by the way, in here is the ridiculous number of meetings we now have. And I know it's just not where I work. It's everywhere. I mean, I have a pair of headset on my head from 7:30 till 5 continuously, and then I'm doing actual work. You know, because I don't know about you, John, but I have a hard time writing more than a, you know, short email when I'm listening to voices in my head, so to speak. So I want to get down to the bottom of that. Is why, what changed during the pandemic, aside from the obvious, that we meet more?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not just to chit chat. It's not just to check up on people to see if they're doing what they're supposed to be doing or anything like that. It's just like, why are we meeting so much? I just, did we do that
before? I think we just reach out. You know, because we're not having those meetings. You know, think of all the incidental meetings that you would have had that were 2 minutes, 3 minutes, just passing by next to someone. You're not having those. And when you don't have those, you feel the need to connect in other ways. And unfortunately, it would seem very strange for someone to say, hey, let's just jump on Zoom for 2 minutes, just to chat about how life's going.
Very true.
So people create a meeting, and then that meeting takes a half hour, which would have been a five-minute water cooler conversation.
Right. Right. And, you know, the other thing is that people, and it's a technology problem. People are setting back-to-back meetings because, you know, they don't know your schedule. They just see an opening in your schedule and say, well, you know, I'm going to plop a meeting right in this half an hour slot or whatever. And there's no bio breaks, you know.
Yeah.
Hit the restroom, refill your mug or, you know, whatever. So Microsoft Outlook has a feature you can turn on, an option you can turn on that creates breaks in meetings. By that, I mean, it doesn't schedule half an hour, 60-minute meetings. It does 25-minute meetings or 50-minute meetings instead of half an hour or one-hour meetings, which is kind of nice, but not enough people use it. Okay, so, yeah, and the other problem is that people outside of my enterprise can't see my schedule, which is good in a way, of course. But it means they can't see my schedule when they schedule me either or try to schedule me. So a lot of times, you know, I've got conflicts. I go, nope, can't do this one. And of course, if they just asked, you know, I could have told them I couldn't do it. But people make a lot of assumptions about one's time. I had an hour block this past week where I had five meetings. I said, well, I guess I can't go to all of them. But yeah, this meeting thing, that's what to me is the real problem, is we have too many meetings, and John's theory makes perfect sense to me. But I guess the other side of the question is, okay, what can we do about that? Especially for those of us who aren't that social to begin with. You know, I would really, really prefer not to talk to people, except for John, of course. but, you know, I'm perfectly happy. I'm constantly telling people, you know, there's this thing called asynchronous communications. It used to be letters, then it was email, now it's chats. They work really good, you know?
Yeah. Fully agree. As someone who is in the middle of heavy meetings Thursday and Wednesday, and now I have Monday and Tuesday some heavy meetings. So
yeah.
I'm thankful that there was a weekend in there to interrupt it.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, John, as usual, thank you for your time. Speaking of time, people's times, thank you for your time. Thanks for the comm badge test. The unexpected technical difficulties on my side were interesting. You know, with the iPhone.
And you're
deciding.
Welcome for now wanting the tricorder.
Oh, man. So badly.
And probably buying the original series communicator.
I do have the original series communicator, but it's not functional like yours. I bought it around, I think, 1999. In fact, I think I mentioned it from John. I bought it from the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum gift store, where a 10 or 12 foot replica of the original Enterprise, the 1701, of course, USS 1701, was hanging from the ceiling. And all it does is it beeps. It doesn't have any other features I can think of. All it does is beep when you open it. My battery's probably dead by now, but my battery may have exploded in it. But in any case, it was fun to have for a while. It's not functional like John's. I do kind of want one now. I may order one. but anyway, thank you, John. I did want to mention that. Another thing John made. Well, he didn't make me buy. He didn't, you know, force me by, you know, physically intimidating me. But I did. I did buy an Osmo gimbal. I should say DJI Osmo 3 gimbal. It's the previous generation. It's not the fourth gen. And I bought that one to save a little bit of money. But I did get a hard case and a tripod with it, So, you know, I kind of got some of the accessories I might not have gotten if I bought the current gen. John, you did not tell me I had to learn how to use it. I thought it would just, like, you know.
Ah, yeah. But
I am going to try to learn how to use it. I should ask you, when you used to do your prof on a walk, were you using the gimbal to shoot your selfies?
I think one or two of them I did. Okay. I don't think I used it for all of them, but yeah, I need to do more of those. Prop on a walk does need to come back. That was a lot of fun, and I just haven't.
I enjoyed
been
them
doing
anyway.
Them recently.
Yes, I am kind of one of your older remote students, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you teach me about what to buy, and I enjoyed your Prop on a Walk series. I do hope it comes back. I did find, by the way, and I need to. I've been watching some tutorials on it on YouTube. I didn't realize it had like self-tracking mode for selfie videos and all kinds mm-hmm. of stuff like that. That I need to try out. Maybe I'll do a short video cast. What are video podcasts called? Vlogs? Maybe I'll do a short vlog to test it. Yeah. Anyway, again, thanks to John for making me spend money. You know, always entertaining and educational. This one was more educational than I anticipated. I've probably watched about 2 hours of tutorials so far, trying to figure out how to use it correctly. But more on that later. Maybe I'll shoot a quick video with it to demo what I've learned thus far. Okay, John, we'll talk to you later. Hopefully we'll get a guest on for next week, and see you next time.